Welcome to Coach, the professional coaching podcast. Conversations to explore what coaching is really all about, what it takes to be a great coach, and why coach training really does make the difference. Discover how coaching can help you in all areas of your life and business in a fast-paced and demanding world. So join us here to share conversations and insights with some of the best coaches from around the globe. Real coaches, real talk. So let's get started with me, your host, Teresa Brooks. So good morning. Well, it's morning where I am. Hello and welcome to the Coach Podcast. I'm very excited about the guest that I have today. So if you are interested in professionalism and high standards and ethics and how really the future of coaching is going to go, then this is most certainly the guest for you. So today I'm going to be talking to Karen Faulkner. And Karen is the CEO and the driving force behind ANLP International CIC. And this is the world's most successful independent association for NLP professionals. And the ANLP runs the largest international NLP annual conference, which is actually coming up soon in May. So Karen is going to share with us today some of her vast experience of running companies and working with SMEs as a management accountant, and also her skills as a certified NLP trainer, which she actually put together to write her wonderful book, The NLP Professional, which if you're watching on the YouTube version of this podcast, you'll be able to see it right now. And this book is amazing. I'm so grateful to have been gifted a copy as a fellow trainer, because it really does give easy to follow practical advice on how to start and run and grow an efficient professional NLP led business. So I've been growing my business since 2018 in NLP, and there is a lot to learn, not just in how NLP is applied as a coach and in a business, which we're going to discuss today, but also like how do you put all that together? So Karen first coined the phrase NLP professional in 2010. And of course, this has become widely used inside and outside of the NLP community. And this platform is all about professionalism and providing a place where we can actually showcase that professionalism and set standards for ourselves and others. So this is about working with ethics, and the NLP obviously has a code of ethics. And Karen has found that so many people get into NLP businesses to give back what they receive from NLP in the first place, which is, you know, a wonderful exchange, but potentially find it challenging to get the financial rewards for their services. So in this book, and what we're going to talk about today, we're going to discuss how you can have a positive impact in delivering NLP and run a successful business. And we're going to dig into a few key points. But before we do that, I would like to welcome Karen and say hello. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast, Teresa. It's an absolute pleasure.
It's great. We had a lovely meeting the other week to connect, didn't we? And sometimes when we start these conversations, I always like to remember to press record first, because we get all the good stuff in the pre-chat. So we're going to dive straight in today, which is amazing. So thanks, Karen. And the book it's what I love about this book, and I haven't read all of it yet, but it's just really kind of, it's got a lot of sensibilities in it, you know, and it's really easy to read and so enjoyable as well. So we'll give people the links to find the book at the end. But first of all, let me just ask you, I'm going to dig into the word professional. And, you know, I talk about that all the time. I have my perception of what the word professional means. And you have yours. And we have a broad understanding, all of us, about what professional would mean. But in this actual context, when we talk about professional, being an NLP professional, what does that mean to you, Karen?
I think what it means to me, it's probably more about attitude than anything else. And it's about just adopting that, from my perspective, it's heart-led, but certainly, I mean, my dad was the most consummate professional I know, and he was a solicitor. And he just, I suppose what I learned from him, what I realized I was modeling, was his conduct. So it was that behaving in a certain way. And I'm sure, you know, as we know from NLP, the behavior leads to results and all that sort of thing. And I think a lot of that then comes from our own values and beliefs as well. So it is that sort of like complete package of conducting ourselves in a way that we feel best reflects what we do.
Yeah. So I suppose I'm hearing that sort of like, you know, walking our talk.
Yes.
It's all very well to say we're professional, I'm so professional, but actually, you know, are you following through on your behavior? So it's
Yeah.
like the alignment, I suppose, and the output of that.
Yes.
Because, you know, equally, what would you say? I mean, so in the terms of being an NLP professional, how would you describe that in context? So really, is it about behaving according to our principles, for instance? Like, you know, the presuppositions are
presuppositions,
super
yes.
important. They're like our little Bible of NLP,
Yes.
our assumed truth that we run by. Can you just share a couple of those with us, Karen, and then we can sort of unpack those and have a look at how we can align our behaviors
Yeah.
with them.
Well, I think one of the key ones for me is about meeting other people in their model of the world. And I think what's it, you know, I think what I learned from the presuppositions of NLP, because when I first learned about them, it was kind of, they're only ever going to work if everybody knows about them and everybody understands them. And then I quickly realized that actually it was, as you said, it's my philosophy for my life. And if I run by this philosophy, then it makes my life easier. So, and one of the things, as I said, one of the key ones for me is meeting people in their map, in their model of the world, because it just enables me to understand people better. And it's almost like trying on somebody else's perception or position on something is very important to give us greater understanding. You know, and it works across contexts, children, parents, friends, colleagues. If we understand more easily where they're coming from, then it makes their behavior easier to understand. And I think that's particularly pertinent sometimes with children, young people.
Yeah, because NLP, of course, is across the board. It's a life application, isn't it?
Yes.
And what's come up for me there, Karen, is when you said about behavior, and the presupposition that I love is that, you know, we are not our behaviors, and behavior is adaptable. And
Yes.
so, you know, that whole premise there is something I use a lot in my coaching, because we all have behaviors. And so when we can separate as well, separating our intention, our ultimate intention, highest positive intention from our behaviors, then we get an insight, don't we? We get to look at it. And it's like, well, I'm not my behavior. Because sometimes that can be very difficult when people are believing that they are
Yes.
how they're behaving, and that is how you're
Absolutely.
behaving. And other people tell you that, you know, your behavior is unacceptable.
Yes.
And I have a
It's
particular.
worse. It's worse when people say you're unacceptable.
Yes.
And my son at school, my younger son at school, would frequently, because he's got special needs, he would frequently, it was listening to the language when it was actually, it could have been presented as your behavior is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And it became, you are unacceptable. And that's so incredibly powerful, and powerful in a negative way to the
Well,
person
it's damaging,
receiving.
isn't it? It's
Yes.
just damaging. And so this is the power of course, that the modeling, how we model, how we use our language. And particularly, I agree with you, anyone that knows me or may have followed some of my posts know that I have quite a passion around, you know, schooling and young people.
Yeah.
And particularly with NLP as an application for that, because the school, for instance, schools are very focused on behavior. So they're always looking for good behavior. You have good behavior, you get good marks. You have bad behavior, you go to detention. And so they both sort of like reward and punish behavior only. So they look at behavior as an indicator of the child. And of course, you know, imagine the difference if every teacher was NLP trained.
Oh, I
Even
do frequently.
And we dream of that, right? So, you know,
Yes.
That's in a positive way, not in a criticism way, because actually
Yes.
I've had meetings with teachers and they've said, you know, we are teachers and we want to teach and we don't have these other skills. You know, they have what they have, and so
Yes.
they only know what they
And
know, and that's another
it's
thing.
language, exactly. It's language. It's understanding the ambiguity of language sometimes. I mean, my son ended up in detention as a fairly young child, or the equivalent of when they're 5 or 6, because he was told to fill a page with Y's. So, you know, the teacher, I'm sure, assumed that he was going to take every line of the workbook and write a row of Y's on it. But he took it literally and put a huge Y that fills the whole page. And I was thinking, well, that's really
That's brilliant.
creative. That's really creative. He's done what you asked. But that kind of, was cheeky, poor behaviour. And that was the interpretation. So
Yeah, of course, not a lack of communication or clarity. Of course not. No. Well, I think that's a great thing to do. I love that. And so, yes, there's another thing that you've we're talking about there is like the modelling. So going back to, being an NLP professional and talking about really modelling and running on our own philosophies, in our own lives, because that's difficult, right? We're all human. We don't suddenly turn into incredible, perfect robots just because we've trained in NLP. And in fact, it can raise a huge amount of awareness for us to be able to start actually applying these philosophies in our own life, because it once you understand that, for instance, some of them you can't get away with it. you can't say, oh, well, I didn't know and not understand. So that's the depth of understanding.
And once you have that awareness, as you say, you can't take it away again. The awareness, once that switch is switched, it's there.
And of course, going back to the meeting people where they are in their model of the world, I think from my perspective there, how would I ever do any work with anybody if I hadn't done that? Because I might have a great book of processes and I've learned that and I know all the stuff and all the patterns and things. I'm like, right, I just want to do NLP. I'm doing air quotes here because sometimes people go, oh, you didn't do any NLP. And so I might be excited to use all those processes. But until I know who that person is and where they are and what their problems are and how that's actually showing up today,
for them,
and what's the problem with their problem, then I can decide, ecologically and ethically, which process or method can I use, which part of NLP can I then apply and use and introduce. And I think this is sometimes where we get to the part where people go, oh, it doesn't work, it didn't work, it doesn't work, it's a load of rubbish. When that happens, I think it comes back to, again, the professional practitioner and how you are actually running your own show, if that makes sense. And of course, our clients and other people around us, like you said, it's interesting. How's it going to work if you don't know? You've got to read them and learn them and know what they mean. But of course, the premise of modeling is that people will model us and they'll look at us and go, well, how do you think that way all the time? Or how are you so empathetic? Or how do you do this? Or how do you do that? So running the philosophies, I think, is this a great piece of discussion, because I just learn from that, from us and by modeling us. So of course, if they want to learn them all, that's totally available as well.
Well, there's a list, there's a few lists.
and I found that when I was doing my trainer's training, of course, looking at the presuppositions and really, really getting into those, or having to learn them, literally verbatim, you really start to unpack the power of what they mean. And even by learning, going through the learning process, there's also an inner coaching process that's going on with you, because it's like, well, am I aligned with this? Do I do this all the time? And to me, it's fascinating how many sometimes people that I speak to that maybe know NLP or of it or are trained in it and say and do things, and you're like, that's not very NLP-ish, is it? So I'm hearing you say that it's all about how we behave as professionals.
I think, and to make that clear as well, I think professionalism is context specific within the context that we're working. So I mention it in the book. I had to turn up when I was a management accountant. I had to turn up with a client to a bank one day because the client was after fairly hefty sized loan for a business project. And as the accountant, I was there, black suit, smart shoes, white blouse, everything you would expect of an accountant in the 1980s. And he turned up with sort of black t-shirt and a casual cool jacket and black jeans. And my initial response was, is that right for the bank manager? And then I quickly realised that actually area that they worked in was the press, the media. That's exactly the right thing to wear for the work that he does. So
Yes.
I went as the accountant, the important person that needs to give the bank confidence that we have handle on the figures. And he went as the person who knows exactly what he's doing in his business that's involved in the media. And between us, appearing very differently, but between us, it was a really good team and he got the loan. So it doesn't matter. Professional doesn't always mean suit and tie.
No, and I think that's really interesting because that's the right recipe. And also, your client was being incredibly authentic as to who they are. If it's suddenly,
absolutely.
You know, and the thing is, and we know as well, just thinking about NLP applications, how we dress, how we look, how we hold ourselves, our state, everything. If he had gone and thought, oh, I better wear a suit, I better look smart and shined up my shoes for the bank manager, he would have felt very uncomfortable and not been able to probably express himself in the same way as he would being himself.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that
Exactly.
sometimes when we try and force ourselves into these spaces and these suits and things like that, that's not necessarily what professionalism is about, because it's also about your own integrity, isn't it? And what feels right for you and being able to follow through on that, of course, in an appropriate way. But I think the landscape of coaching, especially online coaching now, is very much that it's not about suits and clipboards and sitting on, you know, like the sort of 80s formula of NLP with some suited man with his clipboard doing the map across and all of that. It's very much about engagement. I mean, that's how I personally see sort of the next generation of NLP evolving, is that it's very less about process driven or feeling like anyone's going through a process and that whole classroom situation, but more like a whole engagement piece so that we're kind of all walking together, you know. How do you feel about that?
I think, well, I'm absolutely, I mean, I think it's, I suppose my analogy with NLP is it's a bit like learning to drive. So the fun starts once you've done the certificate. You know, I've learned all the processes at practitioner or master practitioner level, and I've got, like you said, the manual, and this is what I do, the same as I learned to drive a car, and I have to have my hands at these positions on the
10 to
steering
2.
wheel, 10 to 2, 10 to 2 and all that sort of thing, and I must do a three-point turn in a certain way. And then the real learning starts once you've passed your test, because that's when it's almost like we become more congruent with it, and we absorb what's happening in the environment, and we become more experienced about what to do when that car pulls out from the left, or the cycle starts to wobble, or something like that. It's the nuances, and it's all the things that you can't just teach when you're learning how to drive, because they cannot teach to every single thing that may occur at some point in the future. And I think NLP is very similar from that respect. It's much more subjective, and it evolves, and it continually evolves. I mean, we have those models, you know, the TOPE model. And I think if we ever abandoned that model of evolving, and how can we do this better? Yeah, NLP is about modeling excellence. So
yes.
How can we do that? How can we do that better? What could happen? What would happen if? It's that just insatiable curiosity, I think, to
yes.
keep doing things better.
Exactly. And it's wonderful that the creativity and the curiosity aligns with the framework and the systems. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know what TOTE is, it's T-O-T-E, test, operate, test, exit, which sounds awfully... what's the word?
Process driven.
It's a real process. It's a process, but you know, that is how you figure out if something's effective, isn't it? It's really the premise of coaching. Test it, do it, you know, check it out. Does it work? What
Did
I've
it
got,
work?
Do it again. And so it has got a real process framework, NLP, as well as its creativity. And I love the analogy of learning to drive the car, because anyone that's a driver has all been through those lessons, and you never forget them, and they felt really clunky and awkward. You thought, I'm never going to be able to go out in the car by myself. And of course, when you do, the first time is terrifying.
Yes, it
Where's the
really is.
instructor? You want to go to the quietest place. What if this? What if that? And then you start to navigate, don't you? Start to, you change how you steer. You know, you drop, well, a little bit of the 10 to 2, although you always want to be safe. But,
Quarter
you
to
know,
three.
you find your own way. And so I think this is about, as well, when we can apply NLP and when we live NLP, it's that self-steering, isn't it? It's that navigation.
Yes.
We're developing a whole navigation system of our own, and then helping our clients too, because, you know, NLP is about empowerment, of course, isn't it? And empowering others, not really just sticking them through a bunch of change processes that they're not quite sure if that worked or not. But then what do they do with that? How do they learn their own navigation system? And that's the part of NLP that I love the most. And just to go back a couple of steps back to the word professional, we've kind of clarified that it's not all about the suits and the boots and the old-fashioned, you know, application of it, but rather being appropriate. But what would you say is unprofessional, Karen, in this context?
And so in this context, and actually this applies to other contexts as well, of other levels of professionalism, but I suppose one of my particular bugbears is what my grandma would have called airing or washing one's dirty linen in public. And I think since the advent, I'm sounding very old now, since the advent of social media, I do know what social media is, and use it occasionally. But since the advent of social media, I think a lot of those boundaries have kind of either disappeared or become more blurred. And one of the things that I think it's, one of those things that I think is important to me as a professional is to not be, is to be dealing with things in an appropriate way. So rather than going on social media and complaining about X, Y, and Z, or how this went wrong, or that went wrong, or something like that, or if it's a gripe with a particular person or a particular company, the first thing that we could be doing is sorting it out with the company or the individual. It doesn't all need to go straight on social media, especially bearing in mind that those social media is there. It's still there in 10 years' time. I remember saying to my older son once, he just had a totally innocent photo on his Facebook profile, swigging a bottle of beer or something whilst in his suit in the driving seat of his car. I mean, obviously, it was the end of the day or something like that. And I just suggested to him that that might not be appropriate given that he was looking for a new job at the time. So it's that sort of thing. It's just thinking about the wider impact of things that we might end up doing. And, it's no problem at all in the right context, but a lot of this seemed to become sort of context specific, is what's appropriate for the context and what's the lasting impact of the words, the language, the actions that we take, maybe in a public setting that could be better dealt with somewhere else, and keeping that professional facade in place. And I use that word, deliberately, because it is about, you don't necessarily want your future clients reading that you were having a real gripe about whatever, shop, store, retail, because partly that's demonstrating that we don't know how to manage our state, which is one of our NLP processes, is state management, knowing how to behave and hold on to whatever emotions that we've got until it's appropriate to share those.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation that, because that as social media has got the platform for people to be able to do, of course, whatever they choose, and it is their choice. Again, it's very subjective. You know, some people may argue, well, I'm professional and I still like to share what I feel and how I, you know, and I think it's important to, if again, creative content and marketed content is different these days. And depending who your audience is, of course, they will respond to different kinds of things. And I think what is probably widely accepted is that people do like to know who people are a bit more than they used to. But they do want to know. They want to have a little nosy. So it doesn't need to be everything, but sometimes it is everything. Sometimes people have built an entire business on the back of everything. And
Yes.
that's what works for them. But in terms of how we're speaking, NLP professionals, I think if something, my personal opinion is, if something's going to be shared, it's almost like, this is my share, and this is kind of what happened and what I didn't like and why I feel like that. This is what I think, and this is my way of resolving it, or my
Yes.
model forward, or my tips for
Yeah.
you. So you've got
Yeah.
a complete set of what you need, not just like rah, rah, rah. And of course, some horrific things play out in the coaching industry between all kinds of professionals, right up to and including, court cases and things that are just, oh, I don't know. You wouldn't have seen them in the past, put it that way. You wouldn't have known that they were going on. And so I think
Yes.
it's down to personal discernment as something that I always think to myself, if I'm going to share something, what's my intention in sharing it? And when it comes up on my memories, or I go through my feed 3 years ago, maybe I'm an old lady and I'm having a good look through, and I'm like, how am I going to feel about that? Now, of
Yes.
course, we don't know that. We
Yeah.
don't know that. And again, going with presuppositions, we're doing the best we can. Everyone is doing the best they can with the resources they have
At the time,
at the
absolutely.
time. And so if we apply that to that, it becomes even more layered and interesting, doesn't it? Because if that's the best that someone has and the way they feel at the time, I think it's really interesting because social media demands so much more than what we're used to giving in many ways
Yes,
over the
yes.
last few years. And so there's many different approaches to that, but at the end of the day, it comes down to what's the shape of being a professional in your eyes, through your eyes. And of course, there's guidance, isn't there? I don't know if
Yeah.
there's specific guidance around this kind of thing through NLP and Code of Ethics, but it would really include
It's,
everything
yeah.
you do, wouldn't it?
Yes, I mean our code of ethics is fairly generic from that sort of perspective. It's much more about presenting NLP, presenting yourself, presenting ANLP in a positive light from that perspective. So, and I'm not saying people can never feel bad or anything like that. I think it comes back to the walking the talk. If I'm And as you said, we're all human. I can be in a situation where I'm utterly wallowing in, oh my goodness, it's everything's gone wrong today. I can be using all the incorrect language for myself and all that sort of thing. But it's if I'm presenting myself as an NLP professional, it probably would be more helpful if I dealt with that, like you were saying, deal with it, and then maybe go back onto social media and say, this is what I was feeling. This is how I dealt with it, because I'm not sure that it would give my potential clients a lot of confidence to see my coach going, having a meltdown and not
No,
resolving things.
not useful at all. And I think that's interesting as well, because you mentioned the word state, of course, and we can be in different states all day long and frequently are. How many times have you like been in a state like that and then, done the work, applied it? That can be in a second sometimes, and then found yourself in a different state.
Yes.
And so we run this. This is being a human, isn't it? And so
Yeah.
it's really important as well, once you know it, also not to put excessively high expectations on oneself,
Yes.
to
Yeah.
always be the professional perfect
Yeah.
NLP model. It's really about, if things do get tough, what tools do I have? What do I know? What can I lean
Yes.
into that can help me?
Yes.
Because I think that there's a lot of NLP, of course, that is about, like you said, positivity and changing for the better and to the positive, better feelings, better performance, more helpful beliefs, etc. But there are some areas in people's lives where it's not quite that simple. And what do you feel about NLP ecology and professionalism in terms of when it comes to people that have rather deeper stuff going on, possibly identity level, trauma impact, things like that. Where do you think professional NLP sits when you meet that?
I think it's down to the individual, but I certainly would say that, it's about knowing your scope of practice effectively and what is appropriate for you to handle as an NLP professional and what isn't. So I know, there are NLP professionals out there who have a lot of additional skills, trauma-informed work and things like that, or psychotherapists or psychologists. They are using NLP as part of their suite of tools. Teachers have NLP skills to enhance their teaching. So it's what is that sitting alongside that potentially will enable you to take that client into those challenging, more challenging situations? Or is there a point at which it's time to refer on to somebody who is more qualified? I know when I was doing one of my NLP trainings as a student, and part of it was doing a breakthrough session. And to save time in a training environment, we were given the client's personal history in advance to assimilate that. And I went back to the trainers and said, I know that in a real life setting, I wouldn't be comfortable taking on this client because of the history and the trauma involved. However, I appreciate this is a teaching and training environment. So, but I just wanted to flag that up, that I recognized that given the traumas involved with this particular person, I wasn't sure that I was going to be the best person to help them get the results they were after.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, that's a really good ecology check, isn't it? Like looking at it and actually flagging up, and I think sometimes that can happen inadvertently if you don't know enough about a client, perhaps, or they bring certain things. I mean, for example, I spent about a good 20 minutes, maybe a little longer, unpacking a limiting belief with a client to see if I might do a particular process on belief change. And because I couldn't get the shape of that belief out in the way that it needed to be for that process, and it kept slipping into lots of other attached areas and going to some really deep-rooted stuff, I decided against doing the process. And I explained to my client why, and they were very happy with that, and that led us to another coaching piece, which was then great, because I was thinking to myself, Karen, first of all, I'm not sure that we've got the root of this. And secondly, if we do get the root of it, I don't think that this process is going to serve that particularly well. And it could just pop up somewhere else as well. So there was a few things around that. And so that's what I personally consider as well to be professional behavior within the client setting. Because at the moment, we're talking about outside of the client setting and how we appear to people and how we run our lives, etc. But it's just as important when we're in the frame, you know, and it's just you and me on the Zoom or in the room, that behavior there. And also, what do you think about being aware of your own, so boundaries and our own projections and how we work like that with NLP? What are your thoughts around that?
So, I mean, I think it's exactly what you've just said with the knowing where to go and what the appropriate boundary was in that situation. I think it's so important that being able to hold the boundaries and being able to work within the boundaries. And part of that is, contracting with the client. So it's probably advisable to always have a written contract just in case. However, there's that informal contracting that goes on that might not be what's written down in a document in terms of, how far this goes. It's okay to stop. And I think, there are so many elements where you can, in NLP, do exactly what you've done, which is incredibly professional. That is professionalism in NLP, what you've just described, because it is about knowing the appropriate things to do in any given client situation. And the beauty of NLP is that we can have loads of tricks and processes and techniques and things like that, and they can be interchanged and interwoven to get the desired result. It's
Yes.
also about knowing when to stop. And we quite often end up on the receiving end when practitioners didn't appreciate when to stop or didn't understand about the ecology. And just as you described, when you were describing what you did in that situation, it reminded me of someone telling me of a situation once where the presenting challenge was this person didn't like getting on a train. And so just as you'd done, they started unpacking it, thinking, that'd be phobia cure or something like that. That
Yeah.
would be easy, and then it turned out that actually it was nothing to do with a phobia of getting on trains. It was all to do with actually they weren't really enjoying the work they were doing. They needed to change their career. Something
Yeah.
completely unexpected from a simple presenting, I have a phobia of trains. And it turned out
Yes.
to not be that at all. So I think what you describe is professionalism in NLP in terms of understanding the boundaries around where's appropriate to go based on your experience and expertise, based on assessing the clients, where is the client, and sometimes, I've spoken to people in the past, it's, oh, I've got a new client tomorrow. They've got OCD and they've been a practice. This person has been a practitioner for about 5 seconds. And it's sort of, is that appropriate? Well, I thought it'd be good experiences, but well, it might be for you, but where might it leave the client? Because something like that might have a trauma-based starting point or something. And it's so important to ensure that, whilst we want to take a client from A to B, that's the intention of coaching, is much more about assuming the person is whole in the first place and moving them from point A to point B, where they want to go to. It's also about understanding that sometimes there are other things that make that not appropriate in the moment.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because again, you mentioned that that might be a good experience for you, but not for the client, but also really might not be for you, especially as a new practitioner taking on someone. Because I mean, if that person has said, "I've had a diagnosis of OCD," then I mean, all of it is mental health, but you're working with mental
Yes.
health, you're working with, stacked habits there and safety
Yes.
systems and all kind of stuff, strategies that person has got wrapped around their life and behaviors, which I would
Yeah.
say is quite complex to
Yes.
unpack. And my
Yes.
question would be, how does the OCD stop you doing something? What might that be? And could I help there rather than actually addressing that? And it's really interesting. So I had a call with somebody who had a diagnosis of ADHD, was really interested in NLP. We had a really long discussion and a meeting, and it became clear. I said to her that we weren't going to work together, but I unpacked quite a lot of stuff for her to look at, and I could see that that would really help her. Some of the applications and the
Yes.
strategies and the ways of thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting to me. I never thought of it like that before. So just some very simple reframes. So I thought there are ways that certainly that can help with
Yeah.
people who have had those diagnoses or are living with that. But it's not something to just plow into. So I think, like you say, your other skills come into it as well. So
Yes.
as soon as I trained as a coach, I went to train to be a mental health first aider as well.
Right.
Moment, I'm doing a level two mental health for children and young people because that's one of my passion areas. And I've done lots of other subsidiary trainings as well, trauma informed, all
Yes.
sorts,
Yes.
because I'm very interested in that landscape and how it fits in with NLP, which allows me to see much more deeply into clients where they are, but what we're going to do and what we're not going to do.
Yes. Yes.
So I think as well that kind of leads a little bit into when people are thinking about what their niche of NLP is going to be, because this is a good question, right? Because it's such a broad application. which is why, you know, through pure coaching and NLP, you'll be like, I can help you with anything. What do you got?
Exactly.
Which doesn't go too well on the marketing side. So again, figuring out which parts of NLP as a practitioner you love best, I think is really important, because you could almost take one part of NLP and make that your entire piece, because it is, there's so much, isn't there, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where it comes back to, again, you know, applying it to what you already know, taking NLP into any context as a teacher, as a healthcare professional, in business, personal development, as a parent, taking NLP skills into any of those contexts is probably going to just have a positive impact on that context. And niching, it's somebody said to me years ago that, you know, if you think about it, especially going back to, you know, social media, Google, things like that, those internet search engines, others are available. I struggled when those things first came about because I didn't know what to put in the search engine. I need to get into their head to think about what they're thinking. And then once I got more confident with, actually, I can just put in what I like and it'll give me something and it'll either be relevant or not. But that's the point, is if, you know, if you live in a beautiful old Victorian house and there's something wrong with the sash windows, just putting in window installer or window fixer into window repairs into Google is not going to help, because you need somebody who specializes and understands the intricacies of sash windows.
Yes.
So it's that, and I think, so that person on you know, who's said, I specialize in sash window repairs, it sounds like it's very niche, but they're going to get those people who need sash window repairs. Absolutely. And there's probably quite a few of them, I would imagine. There's a lot of Victorian and older houses around there. So, but it means that they're not having to, both sides are satisfied, their needs are satisfied more quickly by the niching aspect. Because if you're looking to stop smoking, you're going to search stopping smoking. You're not going to search NLP practitioner, because it's not necessarily going to occur to you that an NLP practitioner can help you stop smoking. So then it's key that those NLP practitioners, those NLP professionals that do know about and specialize in helping people, supporting people to stop smoking, it's a really good idea to say that, because people are searching for a solution to their particular challenge. Not, I want help with everything.
Yeah, and you're right. No one's ever going to say, well, unless you want to train in NLP, which is, of course, then you are going to put NLP training. Absolutely. But I mean, for my whole career before being a coach, I worked in advertising. And, you know, I was trained very well in how to create print adverts, both in design and layout, and also with language. And of course, you know, I would go, and some of my clients, say, for instance, would be a plumber. And they'd be like, yeah, I'm a plumber. So I'd have to do quite a lot of work with them to get to specify what kind of plumbing, or what kind of client, what kind of customer they wanted.
Yes.
And that was all brand new to them, especially in that kind of marketplace. Yes. And we go back to sort of like 2006 onwards, and that was still fairly new. But unless that's specified in that advert, then it wouldn't be noticed. And so it's exactly the same work as I've ever done there, but online. But then trying to find your own niche, for instance, as a new NLP practitioner, when there's this whole plethora of incredible stuff that you've just learned, I mean, where to go? And so then I think it's a case of looking at your own background, your own experience, your own skills, and then say which part of NLP and your passion, you know, because for instance, I was in sales and advertising marketing for years and years and years. Sales was my absolute love, and I was very good at it. When I learned NLP as well, I was like, wow, I was doing a lot of that anyway, but I didn't know, I was unconsciously doing that. And bringing that in, specifically NLP, I bring into my sales program, there's a whole module called the coach approach. And that, of course, is all the NLP. It's all the rapport, it's all the language, it's the listening, it's everything, so that you can have a much deeper, richer conversation, and then that's applied and tied up with the actual sales process, because most people in coaching industry, or certainly women, really detest selling sales product. And they're like, oh, you know, I mean, as a woman in the world, we're an underrepresented percentage in sales careers. So we are, you know, not, there was one of a few women in my company, but they all happened to be at the top. And that was really interesting in sales, really interesting. So I think that gives us a really good shape on not only what professionalism is, a little bit about what it isn't, and which I think just you can figure out from the opposite of what it is. And, you know, really about how you're going to conduct yourself and what you want from your business and what your intention in doing it in the first place is. Yes. Because teaching other people, as I'm coming to the stage now of beginning to train other people, it's a big responsibility. So if I don't have that model within myself, and I want to be able to model the excellence, what am I giving out? You know, what are they going to learn? It's really important to me as I start this part of my journey, who I'm training, how I'm training them, and what they're going to take from it. Because what I realized in my training is that if you say a certain thing as a trainer, it will be taken as read.
Yeah.
So again, you know, the clarity and the cleanliness really of the training space is really, really important.
Yes.
Which brings us nicely segue into training, NLP training. And of course, the fact that we are a non-regulated industry, NLP is not regulated. And, you know, I'd love to just dive into that a little bit, because how is that a problem, firstly, Karen?
NLP not being regulated, I think potentially, well, we certainly see some of that from the perspective of we get so many complaints that land on our doorstep, so to speak, with the expectation that we can do something about it. And of course, because NLP is not regulated, we can't do anything about it unless that person happens to be a member of ANLP. And I have to say that probably 999 times out of 1,000, that person is not a member of ANLP. So it's then supporting this person in the best way they can to find a solution elsewhere. I think the downside or the other side of that is that potentially if NLP was just regulated, just like that, I mean, it never happens just like that, because we've watched other professions going through that and still not getting there yet. But there's so much to take into account with potential regulation, in that, well, who's going to do the regulating and all that sort of thing. And so in a way, it could be argued that actually being unregulated is a good thing. Because it gives us that freedom to do what we want when we want and all that sort of thing. However, I don't think in the long run, I think regulation could be just as challenging, because it potentially puts all sorts of frames in place that aren't appropriate, especially if NLP were to end up being regulated by people that don't understand NLP. And that is quite often, having watched other industries go through it, that's what happens, is that actually the regulators end up not understanding anything about the profession that they are regulating. So it becomes a different challenge. And I know it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence. I am, really. But that's because, you know, from our perspective, it's I don't think it's that black and white, regulated, not regulated. The sort of the middle ground, if you like, is that self-regulation. Which is what ANLP as a professional body provides, is that framework for self-regulation. So in an unregulated industry, being a member of the professional body, having that code of ethics, having that complaints process, having that contact with other NLP professionals, that all forms part of the members being able to self-regulate.
That's really interesting, actually, isn't it? And what I noticed there that is particularly interesting is the talk about NLP being a model of self-regulation, you know, and modelling as a premise of it, versus 99.9% of practitioners that are getting complaints at not being part of the ANLP or not being part of a professional body. So what does that tell us about the standard of some trainings out there?
Well, not so much about the training. I mean, it's is it the standard of the training, or is it what that person chooses to do with the training? Because I think, you know, yes, of course, a trainer can train individuals and say, you know, this is the scope of practice, this is how it could be used, this is how it should be used, and all that sort of thing. However, it's, you know, it's the same going back to the analogy of the driving test. We all learn, we all, well, hopefully one day learn enough to pass our driving test. However, what people do with their car once they've learned to drive is very different.
Yes.
I was on the motorway the other day and was absolutely terrified and nearly pulled over because there were two absolutely ridiculously manic drivers that were racing each other on a very crowded road motorway, undertaking, overtaking. And I was kind of, this is going to end in tears, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they all pass their driving tests at the same, you know, hopefully meeting the same
some
standards.
Point.
But at some point, what they've chosen to do with that knowledge and skills is completely different to someone who is driving sensibly, meeting the speed limits and things like that. So I think yes, there is an element in the training. It's important to train those, you know, those things like ecology and everything like that. And I do think that a lot of those challenging elements of the NLP industry, the NLP field, it's what those people have chosen to do with the training that they've received. They've seen a brilliant marketing opportunity. They've seen a way to take advantage of vulnerable people and that sort of thing to gain for themselves. So, you know, there's we hear these stories of people being charged an awful lot of money and achieving absolutely nothing, the wrong people being taken onto courses that actually, you know, when we were talking about appropriateness earlier, it's sort of, well, actually, it's not appropriate to take that particular person onto a course right now because they are not in the right place, space, time in their lives to be able to get the best out of the NLP training. But when people sometimes, you know, it's dare I say, you know, it's not always just all about the money, but if it's a marketing opportunity, it's a stack 'em high, sell 'em cheap and all that sort of thing, and they're not so worried about what comes out the other end in terms of NLP professionals, then that's what happens.
And those people are those drivers, right? And those are the ones that cause the accidents.
Yes.
And so, what, you know, continuing that metaphor, it's really easy to see that if you're going to be reckless with anything or use it to your own gain, you know, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be an accident. There's going to be a casualty.
Yes.
And I think that's such a shame as well, because it comes down to what we talked about earlier, that sort of assessment of your clients, making sure that you've got the right client for the right training. And also, it's not just in the frame of the coaching session, right? I'm not going to do this process. It's when people apply for the training, what kind of assessment process is there before people come on training courses? Because often you can just sign up online and boom, you're there.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that's how I'll be running mine, to be honest, because, you know, it's very obvious that lots of different things can happen in a training environment, and you want to really have the most robust space that you can, the safest space, rather than having to fight problems or realise that particular delegate is not quite appropriate halfway through, because that affects everybody. So I think, again, the professionalism plays out there. You know, how are we marketing our training? How are we onboarding our delegates? What assessments have we got in place? What conversations, what human connections have we got in place?
Human connections in their own right. I mean, that's the thing, is NLP is very experiential. It's subjective, it's experiential. And so at ANLP, we have never accepted members who have done video trainings, not interacted with a live trainer, not interacted with other delegates, students, It's like reading a book and then saying, right, I'm now a qualified surgeon. You know, I'm a qualified surgeon because I've watched all 16 series of Grey's Anatomy. It doesn't
Exactly.
work
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
it doesn't work at all, and that's a good sign of the sort of the standards and the ethics that the body holds, which is great. And again, just touching on the training part again, I think as a trainer, it's really important to position the membership and what's in it for you and how you, I mean, you've got a sign there if you're watching on the video, the global flag bearers for professional NLP. So if we want to be a global flag bearer, then we need to be part of something which shows us how to hold the flag, and then we choose where we want to take it and how we want to use it and how we want to wave it, you know. But certainly there's a particular kind of flag we should be waving, and that's what we've been digging into today. So I love your take on the non-regulation. I can see that. I think that's really interesting. So where do you think the future of NLP lies if, for instance, regulation is not necessarily going to happen, or if it happens, it could be problematic? And of course, we don't know. We don't have a view on that yet. But what would be in your dream world? Where would it go? How would you like to see it pan out so that we could increase this professionalism?
Well, in my dream world, NLP would be a mainstream solution to so many different challenges, and it would be recognized as such. Like I was saying earlier, you know, people wouldn't necessarily think NLP could support them in stopping smoking. It would be having NLP as a mainstream solution. My ultimate dream world would be to have NLP in the education system. And I mean that from that
Oh,
perspective, because my passion lies in the education system. I'm a school governor. I've had two boys go through the education system. It's my passion, because I think at a young age, having NLP, having teachers that have got NLP skills, they would understand, they would be able to manage themselves better. And I'm not, you know, they're dealing with challenges on a daily basis, and challenges
Absolutely.
way beyond
Their
what's
scope.
expected of a teacher. But being able to manage themselves better to cope with those challenges is personal support to them, understanding the impact of their language on the younger people in their child, you know, at primary school level and early years, may just mean that sometimes, you know, they think a little bit more clearly about understanding. When they understand the impact of their language, then they might choose their words more carefully, when dealing with young people, which then has a better effect on them, a better impact on their students moving forward. By the time they get to secondary school level, you know, 13, teenagers and whatever, and I know, you know, having been the mum of teenagers, that's when we all give up for a while, on occasions. But at the same time, it's, you know, we could teach them those skills. They have so many challenges coming up in their future, that about presenting themselves for interviews, about managing their own anxieties around exam nerves and pressures and job interviews and things like that. And if we can teach some of those soft skills to our young people, to our teenagers, they would be so much better prepared when they come out, when they come out the other side of the school system. And of course, by doing that, then NLP gets a better, you know, gets a good reputation in industry, because wherever those young people end up going, when somebody approaches that industry, you know, their organization that they're now working for, be it the health sector, education, corporate, somebody's going to say, oh, you know, we've been offered some NLP training, or we've been offered some NLP coaching. And those young people are going to be saying, oh, we did that at school, it was really good.
I say this to my daughter all the time. I say, where's your NLP class? Because if it was in there like that, and also I couldn't agree more, because having seen my daughter go through the whole system now up to 15, and there's definitely problems now, and seeing her friends, I'm like, and during that period, as I've been raising her, training in NLP and as a coach, I can see it so differently. So it's like there's been this whole unfolding,
Shift.
and there's actually there's a really exciting project that I'm involved with at the moment, which is about bringing emotional intelligence, mental health support, which involves NLP skills and the soft NLP skills that I'm bringing into a project which is for youth, so youth empowerment program. We just had the funding approved,
Wonderful.
actually, so it's really exciting. It's a pilot, and it's, live input with the children. It's wrapped around sport at the moment,
Oh, wonderful.
but we've just been exploring how the NLP, how I can bring NLP into there, just with like simple state management, really simple things that for children, getting names on their emotions, their language, how they speak, how they behave, interactions with families. And it's just going to be like their short sessions after their sports sessions, when they're all together. And it's for a particular demographic as well, like minority group.
Yes.
So then we want to try and bring that into a broader application, into schools, etc. And also, I've got a big passion for working with parents on this as well. So that I have shared vision with you there, and I know that lots of other our NLP family and community and people listening to this podcast, especially if your parents beyond your wits, you're like, there is hope. And it can be
They
really,
grow up.
I coach my daughter a lot. She knows NLP. She's been practiced. I've practiced a lot of NLP on her as well. I was doing my training, certain things. And when she was little and she was going to lower school, I gave her what were called the magic button. A magic button was to press when she wanted to feel confident. It was just a very simple anchoring thing, and it worked. I was like, "Should we
My
test your
son.
button?" She goes, "No, it's fine. It works, Mummy. It works." And I was like, "Wow." It reminded me how like their neuroplasticity and how they absorb is just instant. And if you think about it in those terms, what you say to a child is a positive or it's a blow. And then we think about the model of NLP, how we work, how that's going in, how that's absorbed and filtered, and then how you feel and behave. We can see the impact that we're having on our children, and we are spending time helping adults, right? Helping adults to communicate better, feel better, be more confident, perform better, so everything better. And a lot of it comes back to wrap around to, parenting and schooling, negative experiences, limiting beliefs. What's that all built from? So the whole thing is a system. And I believe if we can get in early, we can change generations,
Changing,
which sounds very, dramatic perhaps, but it is actually so important, because if this programming continued in this same way, we're up this end trying to fix the adults and help the adults to help the next children. But if we could just get in at the beginning, wouldn't that be amazing? Sometimes it's
absolutely.
5 minutes, 10 minutes, it's just
I
moments that
know.
make a difference, different piece of
Yeah,
language,
it's
different approach.
changing a word, something. I mean, my son, when he was at primary school, as I said, he's got special needs, and he was working with an NLP professional, because I was
Amazing.
too close to the situation,
Yes.
and it was effective. It was in it, just as you said, an anchoring technique, and the anchoring technique all was all around a blue post-it note. So my task as the parent was to go into school and say, please could he put that here? Please could he put this blue post-it note on his desk, because he'd been taught to anchor his calmness and his grounding to the blue post-it note. And the school said no. So I said, well, wouldn't it, why? Well, because everyone will want one. Here's a pack of post-it notes. Give one to everybody. I really don't mind. The other 29 children in the class won't know what it's for, but one will. And that might improve their behavior in the classroom. And that school at that time refused to do it. So it was sort of, that's, but that's the challenge, isn't it? That it's
It's the
this, it's
challenge.
the lack of understanding. And to be fair, it's a long time ago. He's 22 now. So it's a long time ago.
But I wouldn't imagine it's changed too much, because there are frameworks in schools and systems and education, like there is with anything. And so unless you can get in and affect some of those and create positive change, they will still be running on the same kind of systems. And I can see that that is a big problem. And so it's definitely, I just, we can do our bit where we are with our own children, with ourselves, because the best way that children develop, going back to the modeling, so when I can regulate myself and I can teach my daughter, this is how it needs to be, and I can also manage to adjust and say, sorry, that wasn't the way, this, and all of that modeling, then she learns her own skills. And she's becoming a great little coach. I mean, sometimes she says things to me and she gives me a reflection. I'm like, Oh,
Ooh.
wow, you're good. I said to you, you're good. So it's amazing. Well, we could talk all day, I'm pretty sure. And anyone that's staying with us, still listening to the podcast, thank you. And I hope you have found that interesting as we have taken a dive into some of those areas. And of course, as you can see, there can be some very deep dives in all of the areas. Super interesting. But thank you so much. The book, your book, The NLP Professional, of course, has a foreword by Ian McDermott and Robert Diltz. Fantastic to get hold of. We'll be putting the link to Karen's book into the show notes, and the ways that you can contact Karen, and you can find out information about joining the ANLP. If you are an NLP professional who is not a member, please go and have a look at that. Have a look. There is so much support on that website as a member. It is amazing. There's community cafes, there's guidance, there's resources. It's endless. I'm still finding my way around it now. There is just so much. It's wonderful. So it's not just a website that's stuffy and there you are, you've got your membership and your certificate. It's really interactive. And there's lots and lots to get involved with as well, which I think is great. So it really is a community piece. So head over to that. Karen, I'm sure you can be found on the dreaded social media somewhere. Where's your
I
favorite? Or
can.
not? You can, yes.
I'm not a fan of social media actually, but yes, I mean LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. I think I've even got an Instagram account, although that's my daughter-in-law's favourite. That's not one that I do a lot of. But yes, and you can get hold of us via the website as well. So you've
Yeah.
got all the links to those.
Good. Okay, so anybody that wants to speak to Karen, it's like, she's absolutely open to conversations. We've had some great conversations, and it's just sort of like real people, really sort of upholding the work, really, as flag bearers. So it's exciting to be a part of it. Thanks so much for being my guest and sharing your views and the wonderful work that you do. Appreciate you, and I'm sure we all do, for what you contribute. The ANLP, it's great. It's a great place to be part of. So thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you,
And
Teresa.
it's a pleasure to see you, and I'm sure we'll speak again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
You can read Coach Magazine for free online every quarter. Just subscribe at coach-magazine.com and receive it direct to your inbox. You can order print copies, book a directory listing, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram.